We've been going through this series that I'm calling The Language of Scripture. Today we're going to look at faith, the word faith, and tonight we'll be looking at the word grace. We are going to wrap this up today. This will be the last lesson of sort of this mini-series that we've been doing on the last Sunday of every month and then through the holidays, and then we'll pick back up with something new in the new year in our times to preach. So faith is our word for the day, and we're going to be hanging out in Hebrews chapter 11. Go ahead and open your Bibles up there. Faith is one of those religious words that gets tossed around a lot. We use it a lot. We say it a lot. There have been multiple songs written on the word faith. It's a word that is pretty common in the English language, in our day-to-day language. Maybe you've, like I've said before, maybe you've grown up in the church, and you've used this word a lot. And you've become callous to the meaning of it just because you've used it so much. You haven't really paid attention to it in a while. Or perhaps you toss it around all the time, but you don't really know what it means. Or maybe you know what it means, but there are several layers to the meaning of it, several layers to the concept of faith, and you haven't really thought through the implications of that. So that's what we're going to do in our time this morning. Hebrews 11 is the longest chapter in the whole book of Hebrews, and we don't have time to walk all the way through this whole chapter, but I want us to focus on a few things regarding what faith is and what faith isn't and what faith looks like when it's lived out. And what you'll see is that faith begins in your mind. It begins as a thought, it begins as reason, and then it's moved into action. It's moving into committing to something. But before we jump into that, let me say this. I believe that faith, I think for most of us, faith, when we think of faith, we think of it as something that only happens inside of our head. We think of it only as a mindset. We say things, we use phrases maybe like, do you believe that? Or do you have faith in that? So for us, for a lot of people, faith is something that is simply some sort of mental activity that's going on, something inside of our heads. But when you read through Hebrews chapter 11, if you've ever read through that chapter, is it primarily a chapter about what's going on in people's minds, or is it about something else? It's about something else, isn't it? It's about action. It's about people's behaviors, their actions and their choices. Now, you'll see that there are very important points in these people's lives at which it begins in the mind. Christian faith always begins with reason, but it always ends with action. It always ends with behavior. Look at verse 1 with me of Hebrews chapter 11. This is actually one of the only explicit definitions of faith in the entire Bible, and it's right here in verse 1. I want to show you the Greek words here. As you probably realized, I like to look at the original language of verses. That way we can get to the real meaning of what the author's talking about. Faith is the apostis, is the word there. Faith is the apostis of things hoped for, the elenchos of things not seen. Now, many of you in the audience today may be reading from your own Bible. You may be reading from a more common translation such as ESV or NIV, and which translates, faith is the assurance or the confidence of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. Now, if you read that translation, you may think, as you read that, you think, okay, so faith is something like an internal state of mind that I get myself into about something that I can't be sure of, but that I hope for, right? That's how I read that interpretation. And so it's confidence, it's assurance, it's conviction, all these things going on inside of your mind. It's about getting yourself into this mindset of, you know what, I really, really, really think this is true, but I'm not really sure it's true. That's sort of how I read that translation. But then some of you may be reading a different translation, the second one I have up here, from the King James Version or the Contemporary English Version, which reads this way. Faith is the substance or the reality of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So according to that translation, faith is not a mental state that you have to get yourself into. Faith is actually an experience that you have. How cool is that? Faith is something that you get to experience. It gives you a taste or a glimpse of the thing that you hope for. It puts you in touch with the reality of what you have faith in. You get to glimpse at it. You get to experience it. Now, are these two translations different? Well, yeah, they are. They're completely different. But that shouldn't bother you because there's only one Bible, and it's simply the fact that the Bible's written in Hebrew and Greek and some Aramaic. This is just a differing of opinion between scholars, between translators. That's all this is. No two languages are alike. No two languages ever have an exact word-for-word translation. There's no equivalent exactly in languages. And so that's all this is essentially a differing of opinion on what the original author of Hebrews meant. Now, with that being said, the vast majority of commentators, the vast majority of scholars that I've studied believe that the King James Version here is the better translation. It's the more accurate translation in this instance with these verses. And I agree with them, given the context of Hebrews chapter 11. I don't believe that faith is simply a mental state of being. I don't believe that faith is simply a mindset that you have to muster up, you know, to make yourself feel sure about what you're not really sure about. I don't believe that's what faith is. I don't believe that is what the teacher is getting at in Hebrews. It's not a blind faith. It's actually something much more profound than that. So faith isn't just a mental activity. It begins there. Faith starts here. But faith is actually an experience that you have because of the choices that you're making. It's an experience that you have because of the way that you're living. And when you live in faith, and when you act in faith, you actually begin to get a taste of, you get a glimpse of the reality that you're leaning towards. You get a glimpse of the reality that you are living for and towards. You see the substance or the evidence of the thing that you can't see. Now, that may sound very, very bizarre to you. That may not be how you think when it comes to faith. You may be thinking, what on earth is he talking about? Think about it like this. Maybe you're like me this time of year. I do not like cold weather. I can't stand cold weather. I love to be outside. If I can be outside while the sun is up, I'm outside. But I do not like cold weather. So during the winter, I just hunker down. I hibernate in my house. I'm like Jennifer McKnight. I put on 12 coats, and I, you know, I just do not like cold weather. I don't even like snow. The only time I like snow is when I'm in Breckenridge, Colorado, and I'm skiing. I want snow 1 week a year, and that's about it. I believe that seasonal depression is a real thing, and I suffer from it. I do not like the winter time. I prefer summer weather. I prefer t-shirts and shorts. I prefer 90 degree plus weather. I love being hot. I'll get in a hot car and just sit in my hot car and be like, oh, this feels so good. So this time of year, I kind of grumble. I'm a little bitter towards people. You know, I complain a little bit. I sit inside in the cold and I groan and I complain because I can't be outside, because to me, winter feels like it's going to last forever. You ever felt that way? I mean, come February, you're like, man, how long is this winter? And if your kids get sick, that amplifies it, doesn't it? How long is this winter going to be? But here's something that's interesting. Come late February, maybe the temperatures start to get up in the high 40s, maybe. Or if we have a random sunny day, here's what I'm doing. This is an old picture, obviously. But I'm going to throw on a t-shirt, I'm going to take my socks and shoes off, and I'm going to go outside. And I'm going to encourage my family to do the same thing. This was actually taken on a sunny day in January a few years ago. It couldn't have been over 50 degrees that day, but it was sunny, we'd been cooped up in the house, so we decided to take our shoes off and to put t-shirts on and to have a picnic on the front lawn. To some people, that may be ridiculous. To some people, that may seem like bizarre behavior. But when you live with, it makes sense when you live in a world where you feel like winter's going to last forever, doesn't it? And then you realize it's not going to. Sweet. I can put on my t-shirt, I can take my shoes off, and I can go outside and I can have a picnic. You know why? Because spring is on the horizon. Summer is right around the corner. And so I dress accordingly and I start to act like I believe that summer is coming. There's something else that comes along with this. What is one of the first wildflowers to bloom in Oklahoma in early spring? A dandelion, right. They call it the bee's first food. This is a picture of our backyard. It's a flower that you're probably familiar with. Some of you despise dandelions. I get that. And you spray them and kill them. Whatever. I let them grow. And this is our backyard. I look forward to when the dandelions bloom. I can't wait until they bloom because this is what our yard looks like. We'll actually go out in the yard, take dandelion seeds, and spread them more just so we have more dandelions blooming in our yard. But then sometimes you get this bizarre behavior going on with our weather pattern. The dandelions will come out, but all of a sudden it'll snow again. All of a sudden the weather gets cold again, and I'm left like, oh no, you know? It's like, wait, is it spring or is it winter? Is it spring? What's going on here? And so you get scenes like this in your yard. And so you get these wonderfully beautiful dandelions, and they are proof, they're physical, tangible evidence that spring is coming, that winter is not eternal, and then it snows again. So it is by faith that you put on your t-shirt. It's by faith that you take off your shoes and you go outside and have a picnic. Right? That's not blind faith. That is faith that has a very good reason to do the things you're doing and to act the way you're acting. And you can point to it. You're looking at it. You're saying, look, there it is. New life has sprung up from the ground. New life is emerging. I can point to something. I can point to evidence for the reason I'm acting the way that I'm acting. And the idea is that when you're wearing that t-shirt and it's 50 degrees outside, you're actually beginning to experience the reality of sunny and 75 degrees. You're not there yet, but you get a taste of it. And if you were to just sit around and think about wearing your t-shirt, if you were just sit inside and think about having a picnic, that's not going to do you any good, is it? You're not going to get a taste of what you long for, what you hope for. So faith is both thinking and a response to a good reason for living the way that you're living. The world is going to be different than it is now. Death will not always reign. And I'm willing to live in the reality of that change. And as you do so, as you live that way, it puts you in touch with the substance or the reality of what is to come. And that's exactly what the teacher, the author of Hebrews 11, is telling us about faith. So I want to explore this a little bit more. There are two ways in which we experience this reality. Look at verse 11 in Hebrews 11. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. So think about this for a second. Sarah, who is in her late 80s, approaching her 90s, she gets a promise in the book of Genesis that she's going to have a kid. It's a bizarre promise. And what is her response and Abraham's response? Do you remember this story? What's their response when God tells them you're going to have a kid? The text says they fall on their face and they laugh. They laugh. They belly laugh at Yahweh. Like, what, are you kidding me? But then you get the rest of the story in Genesis. And then you get the commentary here in Hebrews chapter 11. And what does she do? Well, the text says that she considers, she reasons, and what does she consider? Well, she considers whether the one who is making the promise is actually faith-worthy. She considers whether the one who is making the promise is actually trustworthy. Can I trust him? So Abraham and Sarah, they've been in this land that they've been roaming in for so long that they've traveled to, and God has provided for them. He's taken care of them. He's brought them wealth and abundance in this land. He's brought them peace and protection up to this point. So has God been faithful to Sarah up to this point? Yes, he has. She has a dandelion that she can point to. God has been faithful to me. This is proof that God is faithful. Is it reasonable for me to trust in him? Yes. Does she have absolute certainty? No. But she does have a reason to believe in God. Go down to verse 17. Look at this. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. So this is really a key moment, a pivotal moment in the life of Abraham. He's about to sacrifice, he's about to kill his son, even though, think about this, his entire story revolves around this son. Abraham's entire story revolves around Isaac, this promised son, and he would be blessed through this son. And so what does Abraham do? Well, look at verse 19. By faith, he reasons in his mind. He considers, because Isaac is his dandelion. Isaac is what Abraham can point to and say, you know what? God is faithful. His son is evidence, so he reasons that God was able to even raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back. So Abraham has a choice, not just about his thoughts, but about his behavior. What is he going to do? And the first thing he did was sit down and reason. The first thing he did was sit down and think it through. And this process is so counterintuitive and countercultural to many of us, because we think by faith, when we hear that word faith, we think by faith means that you ditch reason at the door, right? You leave it at the door. You don't reason when it comes to faith. That's just a blind leap. That's what faith is. So many people in the world today think that Christians are just brainwashed. They think we're just brainwashed and that we're walking around blindly believing in nonsense, that we have no good reason to believe the things that we believe. In fact, probably many of your family and friends think that you're kind of cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs because you're here, don't they? They think that we're handing out Kool-Aid at the door. My family, I have family members that think I'm crazy for believing in a God that I can't see. They think that we're some sort of cult and that we're crazy for buying into this whole thing. Listen, I hope that you're not buying into this whole thing for no reason. I hope that you're not here for no reason. Because you have a very good reason to be here. We have a very good reason for being gathered here today. Why we are following Yeshua, why we are following Jesus. And the reason is the fact that he's a man that lived 2,000 plus years ago, and there's testimony from hundreds and hundreds of people about his life, about his death, and about his resurrection. We have a very good reason for being here. So much so that Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, he says, he's writing to people who live in Jerusalem who are hundreds of miles away from Jerusalem, and he's writing to them about the resurrection of Jesus, and he says, there's over 500 people that have seen him alive, and in fact, you can go talk to them. You need to reason in your mind, and you can go talk to them. You can challenge this. That's how confident Paul is in this. He appeals to reason. This death and resurrection didn't happen in some remote corner of the world. It happened in one of the most prominent cities in the ancient world. Hundreds and hundreds of people saw him alive from the dead. Now, is it a reason that subjects itself to poking and prodding, to questioning? Well, yeah. And I hope that some of you do that. If you need to ask questions about the Bible and ask questions about the resurrection, then you need to do that. The Bible can handle your questions. Jesus can handle your questions. But it's a reason nonetheless. It's a reason. And the worldview of a follower of Jesus is that the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus is the dandelion that we point to. In a world of sin and death and darkness, I can know that sin and death do not have the final word. How do I know that? Because Jesus is alive. Because I have good reason to believe that Jesus is alive. I can point to my dandelion, and it may snow on my dandelion, and it may snow more in your yard than it does in my yard, and sometimes it may snow more in my yard than it does in your yard, but I can point to it because I have a good reason to believe what I believe. It's by faith that we believe that Jesus rose from the dead. I believe that because of eyewitness testimony. I believe that because no one has ever produced a body. I believe that because of the courage shift that I see in Peter and the other apostles, the way they were acting before the resurrection and the way they were acting after the resurrection completely changed. It's not a blind leap of faith. It's based on reason. Now, is faith only based on reason? No. Is Hebrews 11 a bunch of people sitting around entertaining ideas? No. Remember, reason leads to action. What are you going to do about it? Look at verse 8. This is a great example of faith in action. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. So he went. Even though he couldn't see or know where he was going, he went. So faith and obedience are kind of this different side of the same coin. You can't have one without the other. So he begins with reasoning whether the one calling him to leave is trustworthy. He decides yes, and so he acts. He obeys. That's what biblical faith is. Let me give you a simple illustration. We'll see how this goes. Is there a small black stool behind me? Some of you may not be able to see, but is there a small black stool behind me at all? No, thank you, yeah. If I were to say, oh, but there is a stool. You say no, but there really is a stool. I promise there is a stool. I really, really, really want you to believe that there is a small black stool behind me. Is that faith or is that stupidity? That's stupidity, isn't it? There's no reason for you to believe that there is a stool behind me. Okay, close your eyes a second, okay? Close your eyes 1 second. Close your eyes, Chris. I saw you peeking. All right, open your eyes. And some of you aren't going to be able to see this. Just pretend you didn't see me do that, okay? Is there a stool behind me? Yes. Can I see that stool? No. Is there a good reason for me to believe that that stool is there behind me right now? Why? Because you can see it, right? There's a whole bunch of you testifying that there is a stool behind me right now, even though I can't see the stool. There's a whole bunch of people here in the Bible who saw it, who saw him. Now, how is it that I'm going to be guided to know where to land my faith? How is it that I'm going to be guided to know how to find the stool? Well, I'm going to look to the testimony of others. Tracy, I want you to come up here real quick. Tracy Talley, one of our elders, if you don't know that. I'm going to get Tracy to help me out with this. All right, Tracy, you stay out here. Stay out here. Down here, Tracy. Okay. I need you over here so you can see the stool because I can't see it. Okay. All right, Tracy, I want you to guide me to the stool without me seeing it. Remember, your left is not my left.
Go backwards 3 steps.
Okay.
To your left, 3 steps.
Okay.
One more, a little bit.
Okay.
There you go. Now back about two steps. Now back one more. Sit down.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. You're good. You're good. What just happened? Well, a whole bunch of things just happened. I reasoned that the stool was here, and then I acted, didn't I? It wouldn't be faith if I just stood there and believed that, yeah, I agree, a stool is here. But there's a transfer of trust. I have an elder who can help guide me to the stool. I have a group, a community of faith that helps guide me to sit where I need to sit. There's a transfer of trust. I'm not just self-sufficient. I can't do this on my own. I need you to help guide me to what I can't see. And you need me to help guide you to what you cannot see. We need the testimony of those who have seen it to help guide us. We need our elders to help guide us to what we can't see. And in some sense, I still can't see the stool, can I? I can't see it, but I get a taste of it. I get a feeling of it. I can feel that it's carrying my weight. I can feel that it's there. I can feel that it's sure and it's true and it's solid and it's a firm foundation, even though I can't technically see it. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence, the taste of things that we cannot see. And if you've ever acted in faith and experienced God's faithfulness that has carried you in that act, you know exactly what that's about, don't you? You know exactly what that taste of reality is about. And so I look to the dandelion, Jesus rose from the dead. And this should reframe the way that we think about obedience as far as Christianity goes, because following Jesus is not easy. It's difficult. And he calls us to live in ways that are just countercultural, that ways that are hard and difficult, and they seem crazy to the people around us. Think about this. Do you have any good reason to forgive someone, to love someone that has hurt you or harmed you? Do you have any good reason to do that? No. That makes no sense in our current world. But imagine a world where every relationship is reconciled. Imagine a world where all truth is exposed. Imagine a world where gossip and slander and bitterness and anger and hatred do not exist. Does it make sense to forgive your enemy now? Absolutely. It makes sense to put on that t-shirt. It makes sense to take off those sandals. It makes sense to live that way because it is by faith that you are living and it's by faith that you are acting, because there's a new creation on the way. The way the world is right now will not always be. Resurrection will have the final word, not death. Therefore, live like it. Therefore, live in light of this. Respond accordingly. We live by faith, not by sight. We live by faith, and we have good reason to do so. I want you to quickly see what that looked like for these early disciples, these early followers of Jesus, and just let the text and the testimony move you. Let it wash over you, and let their example empower you to live by faith. I've asked Conrad to come up and read Hebrews chapter 11, 32 through 40. Conrad has that good, strong, manly voice, and I want you to just hear the text read through Conrad's voice. Do what? That's
good. Sorry. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. All these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise, God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us.
Thanks, God. I don't know where you're at with this whole lesson. There might be a whole bunch of you, you're on the questioning side. Is the stool really there? Is it? I don't know. I would encourage you to ask away. Dig deep, ask questions, don't take a step forward until you can. And then there might be others of you who consider yourself Christians, but you're frustrated with the other Christians who say, just believe, just have faith, stop asking so many questions. But no, that's ridiculous. Ask questions. There's a good reason there. Jesus can handle it. The testimony will speak for itself, because if the stool's not really there, let's be honest, I'd rather be somewhere else. I'd rather be on the mountain bike trails. I know you'd probably rather be somewhere else. If the stool's not there, it's not there. Let's go home. If you need to ask questions, ask questions. But we have lots of testimony that it is there. And we have lots of testimony of experience in this community that it is there. We have good reason to believe. I have good reason in my own life, things that I've tasted, things that I've felt, that I know it is there. And for some of you, it's not about intellectual doubt. It's just the fact that you need to make a choice about what are you going to do with Jesus. Are you going to transfer your trust and bring others around you to help guide you to where you need to be? Or are you just going to keep letting Jesus be this idea that you never make a decision about? Now is the time to make that decision. Now's the time to make a decision about Jesus, to be clothed with him in the waters of baptism, to let this community surround you to help guide you. If you have a need this morning, come as we stand and sing.